McLaren.
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
And Trey McLaren.
This is the sound of my voice.
And the look of your face if you're watching live. Or not live, but recorded. How's it going, guys?
Good. We're going to talk about Modern Horizons. I love Modern, and there's a lot of sweet cars to talk about today.
I don't love Modern, but there are a lot of sweet cars to talk about.
There you go. Trey, are you just right on Modern? Like, right in the middle?
Yeah. Regular old Goldilocks over here.
I am excited for new cards to enter Modern, because I don't like where it is right now, so.
Well, there you go.
I think I'm excited for this set. You know who else is excited for this set? It's our sponsors over at Oasis Games. MTG Oasis is pretty awesome. Trey, why don't you tell us a little about them?
I'd be happy to, Spencer. Hello, fellow Magic competitor. If you're like me, and I think you are, then you have ascended to a higher level of consciousness, and you realize that time is not linear. It is less of a flowing river and more of a cool, silvery lake where all of eternity's events have happened, will happen, and are happening simultaneously. And while you may experience time as only a god was meant to see it, it doesn't stop you from procrastinating. You are left in an inevitable late rush to get all of your cards together for the next event that is barreling at you like a loose divine boar. Don't fret, Enlightened Fiend. You are saved by the lightning-fast shipping from your good friends at Oasis Games. That's right. Head over to mtgoasis.com and use code CCMTG for 15% off your first order. And then you can use code WouldThatBeGood for 4% off every order. That's right. Every order.
Wow. You know, it's really funny. I was just telling former co-host Manny how much I love Oasis and our relationship with them. I think that it's, I don't know about you guys, but I'm really glad that our sponsor is Oasis Games. Like, legitimately, I just enjoy the relationship a lot.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's been really awesome. They always send us over really good ad copy, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of copy, we're going to need a lot of copy today, because today's going to be our Pick 2 set review, which, you know, has a nice ring to it. You know, I don't know where this idea came from, or...
Probably some geniuses, really. Inspired.
Yeah, so, Mason, why don't you tell us what a Pick 2 set review is?
Sure, so this is the way Trey and I used to do the set reviews back in Even Odds, but we're going to have 5 categories to talk about 2 cards each. So instead of doing a traditional top 10 list for each of us and us having these cards that, you know, we like maybe have a chance of seeing competitive play, but don't really, we get to talk about cards in different lights. And what that allows us to do is we're still going to hit all the big ones that you're going to expect on the list, but we're also going to talk about cards that normally you wouldn't get to hear on a podcast because they're just not going to be talked about, right? So today for our 5 categories, we're going to list them out here, and we're going to go through them in this order as well. We got sleepers, which are going to be cards that people aren't really talking about that we think are good. We got new kid on the block. We have so many new cards added to Modern, so we're going to talk about exclusively new cards there. We got some near misses, which are cards that we think are pretty close to being playable in Modern, but we think this aren't going to make it. We got hopeful, which is sort of like near miss. Near miss is more cards that like aren't going to, we don't think are going to make it. And we hopeful like cards that we're pretty sure are going to make it, and we really want to play with them, but we're not 100% sure there. And then for being like all-stars, I should say. And then we have hits, which as you might expect are cards that we think are going to help define Modern and change it. So those are the 5 categories. And Spencer, do you want to start us off with sleeper? What's your first sleeper?
Yeah, my first sleeper is Scale Up. So this card is 1 mana for a sorcery. I'm not gonna lie, my computer's being real slow. I'm still trying to load the cards, Mason.
Okay, that's fine. So I actually know Scale Up because I'm preparing to die to it a lot as a deck. I don't play decks that beat in effect. It gives turret creature, it makes turret creature's power and toughness a 6/4. And a worm, I believe, as well. Basically turns it into Craw Worm.
Yeah, so this card, I thought it was really funny, as something that nobody's talking about. I didn't actually see anything about it. I'm the only person I saw talking about this when it was spoiled. And this card just kind of seems really good. It's always going to be, if it's your first one, it's always Groundswell, which is pretty powerful.
Yeah, they don't still, it's better than Groundswell is what you meant, right?
Well, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I guess I was thinking of the +4/+4 one that's
Might of Old Carosa.
Yeah, Might of Old Carosa. And this is better than that.
Yeah. The first one's way better. And that's the interesting thing, because I saw some talk the day it was previewed, because some people on the internet said this is the best card ever printed and it's going to make Infect insane.
Oh, I didn't see any of that.
And then, yeah, but there was another section there that said this card's just fine for Infect. It leads to a couple more turn 2s, but it's not going to break the game or anything. I think it's a good ad for Infect. I don't know, Trey, what do you think?
No, I think that it is too. I mean, it makes sense. It does the things that you want to do. It's cheap. It puts a ton of power on an Infect creature. And it also, well, the other aspect of the card, since we had not had it pulled up, it has Overload for 6 mana, which is not likely to not likely to come up. But
it is cool that they give it trinket text.
Yeah. It's something that could happen at some point, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people talking about somebody was talking about this card in another format for its Overload use. Maybe it was replacing like Craterhoof Behemoth in Commander decks or something, but
is it a common? Could it be a popper thing?
It's an uncommon.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, maybe someone's talking about it maybe as a thing you could do in Elves and Legacy too. Just
I think this card would be too good for popper.
Yeah, it probably would be. It's a bunch of power. Now that I'm thinking about that. Yeah.
We didn't really discuss this before, but are we wanting to talk about cards specifically in the context of only Modern, or if they're new cards, can we talk about their application elsewhere?
Yeah, normally this is kind of where the conversation takes us. We kind of were focusing on Modern, but I mean, like, talking about cards in Popper and Legacy is, like, that's part of a set review, right? Like, you gotta talk about cards for everything, so. And we luckily get to skip Standard, so.
I don't know that this card would make an impact in Legacy Infect.
I don't think so. I think Invigorate and Berserk, I believe is the double power one, are pretty good, and that deck's more like about cantripping to find those and having some more disruption. Well, the Modern one's kind of faster normally.
Yeah, I do think Scale Up is probably like a pretty good two of in Modern, but those kind of two ofs can really change a deck like Infect. So I find it funny that people I don't think anybody can read this card and be on the side of, like, this will do nothing ever. This will never be correct. Because, like, Magic, you know, hopefully will last for all time. And Infect will, I mean, let's be honest, I think we'll see another Infect creature. I know they say we won't, but, like, you know, if they just print something slightly better than Ichor Claw Mirror, Infect gets a lot better, and this card could be a huge part of it. Or Green Sun gets unbanned, and then cards like this get really good.
For sure. Also, like, I've heard and talked to people about, like, that maybe, like, the negative power returns with Infect creatures. Like, it's a thing from Time Spiral. They like, Time Spiral hints at future mechanics. So you put, like, a one mana, a negative one, one, and then Scale Up suddenly, like, this is just another Glistener Elf. And so you get even more turn twos. But, I think it increases the chance of turn twoing. And I think it does a cool thing that someone brought up that I know that plays Infect that was saying that with this and Become Immense, they kind of are at odds in some ways. But it lets you build your Infect deck in different ways in different environments, right? Like, Become Immense lets you go a little longer, push through combat. Scale Up lets you be a little faster. And before, Infect was kind of always in Modern about going as fast as possible, really. So
that's actually interesting, because I do think that Become Immense has become a lot worse in that deck. And Scale Up kind of, you know, does a, like, lets you be faster without having to play, like, Get Probe. So, I think it's a good addition.
I agree, yeah. I think the card's definitely going to see play. Do I think it's breaking Modern?
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Do we both have my next card, Mason? Is that right?
I don't think so, no. But read your next card as I double-check the list.
I have Isla's Influence as my other sleeper.
Oh, I had that in a different category.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought you had that in a different category. Mm-hmm. So this card is an enchantment. It's, I believe it's green, green, green.
It is. The best converted mana cost possible, really.
Just of all time?
Yeah. Green, green, green.
Then you can discard a land card to create a 2/2 bear creature token. So, this might not be a sleeper anymore. I think people might have actually caught on to this being good. But I think that this is better than Seismic Assault in, like, quite a few situations. It lets those decks go long, which Seismic Assault technically did, but I think this does a better job of it. Like, especially in Legacy, a bunch of 2/2s is a lot better than 2 damage in Legacy, I find. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
No, I think this card's really intriguing. Obviously, best friends with Life from the Loam. Like, if you can just continue to put cards back in your hand, you have, you know, just making 2/2s. And I mean, I played Zombie Infestation when it was in Standard, when you're discarding 2 cards to make a 2/2. And so if you can just discard 1 land, like, this is a clear improvement over that type of card. And that card was playable and constructed before. That's Standard instead of Modern, but still.
Yeah, Mason, should we say what category you have this in?
Yeah, sure. And I have it in the Hopeful category. So I think it is powerful. I think it's going to see play. It might just be a little too much. So here's a disclaimer. these two fine gentlemen have played with aggro loam decks before and have played against them. I have never interacted really with the deck. So I know that that's a thing, but I don't know like what it needs. And I do agree with Spencer that this does seem better than Seismic Assault, like really on average.
I looked at this card and immediately wished that Punishing Fire was unbanned in Modern. I was like, oh man, this would be like such a cool Punishing Fire deck, and was really sad that it's banned. Mason had sent me a deck list with this card, and I asked him if he had seen Aggro Loam in the past, but I forgot that Aggro Loam had played Punishing Fire. Yeah, I think that, like, this plus Loam is just pretty sweet.
But I never played it, because there's an extended Aggro Loam deck, correct?
There's a modern one. It used to top 8 PTQs in old modern before Punishing Fire got banned.
Oh!
It was, like, the best deck in modern for, like, 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought Punishing Fire was one of the, like, auto-banned cards back in the day. Interesting. Okay, I did not know that. Huh.
Yeah.
I think it's powerful. Like, you make a lot of 2/2s. Ross Merriam on Versus Live had a deck list that was like a black green kind of like attrition you deck, and then had this as the win con, because you can play alone, buy back 3 lands, cycle, play it, and then that just makes a bunch of 2/2s every turn, and the plan is to overwhelm them.
I do like that I get to play Murderous Cut in my black green deck if I'm playing alone plus this. I haven't seen lists with that, but I actually think that's pretty hot.
Yeah, Murderous Cut's really strong when you get to play with it.
Yeah, and I don't know. Is there a reason for it not to be Bug and play Stubborn Denial anyway, if you're like playing a Loam Tarmogoyf deck?
I might play a different counterspell since we're going to hit our land drops, but you could. I think one of the things Ross said is he wanted to start off with like a simple list and see like, does this work? And then if it does, can we look into like playing Knight of the Reliquary? Can we look into playing blue cards? Can we look into playing red cards? So
I do like that you get to think about potentially using a card like this in the long game tray, that like compared to something like Seismic Assault, which technically does that, but I think this just gives more color combinations an option to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I think that there's more versatility to being able to affect the board like this, right? To be able to build something up and go wide, I think is a big impact. And I don't often get excited about flavor, but the idea that you have a giant bear that influences the world to turn the land into other bears is pretty fun.
Yeah. Let's go on to your sleepers, Mason. I think all of us will have your first sleeper on our lists.
Yeah, so Seasoned Pyromancer is my first sleeper. This is 1 red for a creature human shaman. And it says, when Seasoned Pyromancer enters the battlefield, discard 2 cards, then draw 2 cards. For each non-land card you discard, create a 1/1 red elemental creature token. And then it has, in the graveyard, you can pay 3 red to exile Seasoned Pyromancer from your graveyard, create 2 red 1/1 elemental tokens, and it is a 2/2. So this card got compared to Young Pyromancer a lot when it got previewed.
Because it is Young Pyromancer.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It is the adult Young Pyromancer in the art, and it creates red elemental creature tokens, right? And it got, I think, pretty quickly, this, like, there are a lot of memes going around, like, when you get older and you get worse, you know what I mean? Like, you can't run quite as fast as you used to with the comparisons. But I think these are just different cards.
Yeah, I think that's a really funny thing to say. They're just so different. This is in my New Kids on the category, and I just think this card is legitimately great. The first thing that I saw when I saw this card was like, oh man, this is like the perfect standard card for like red mid-range decks, which are like my favorite decks to play. You know, whether it's blue-red or teamer or stuff like that. Red green based mid-range decks are like a sweet spot for me, so in the teamer colors, and this card just like makes those decks sweet, and like enables you know, different type of Mardu strategies. Mardu mid-range, recently one of the better decks in Modern not too long ago. I think this is a huge addition to that deck, and you can play it alongside your other Young Pyromancers. You know, Modern won't always be the way it is now. We know Modern fluctuates, and I think that there could be another day where Seasoned Pyromancer is one of the key cards in Modern. I know that it's in Mason's Hopeful category, but I just think that it's probably a hit. Like,
no, this is my sleeper. It's in my...
Sorry. Sleeper.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. So, go ahead.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, so we had Young Pyromancer, and apparently Young Pyromancer grows up to be Lingering Souls. That's
no, he grows up with Lingering Souls as its best friend.
Yeah. Yeah, this card, it's so powerful, and like the decks kind of like that Spencer talked about. Like, if you've been watching Versus Live, any Todd has played one every single week since the card got spoiled. He loves this card. He's been doing a lot of cool things with it. He's been playing like a Grixis Unearth deck since Unearth was printed into Modern now. He's like been doing that with Snapcaster Mage, this, and something else. So it's like kind of a grindy move through your deck, just discard lands, and then late game, you know, you can buy this back where you can make bodies out of it. But also, there's a new deck on the block with Boreas Vengeance, and this is a thing that this deck could do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this enables that and has like a backup plan of going wide on the board. Or maybe you like discard your stuff to block humans and then kill them. So, Trey, what are you saying?
Yeah, but I think that you know, one of the reasons that I make a comparison is I think that this has a lot more in common with Lingering Soul than it does with Young Pyromancer, right?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Young Pyromancer is, you know, you have to build your deck around it. You have to go wide in order to try to get value. You know, this doesn't ask a lot of you. This just asks you to put this in your deck and have the mana to be able to cast it. And then you can get value out of what it is that's going on. So similar to Lingering Souls, and I think it makes a lot more sense and more like mid-rangey type decks than it does in like the type of things that you would normally see the like the baby version of Pyromancer in.
Yeah, I also like this card seems so good to me. Like when you're hellbent, you just get a draw two, and like I've seen people call this card bad. Like they're like, yeah, this is just not playable, and I'm like, what? This card is like, I don't know, potentially legacy playable to me. I think this card is really, really good.
Yeah, the card's definitely... Sorry, Trey.
Legacy playable seems like a stretch to me, but, I mean, I guess there are types of legacy decks that might want it.
Yeah, I think that, like, it fits... I don't know. I don't know that it's, like, archetype enabling, if that makes sense. But, like, I don't know. I've played... legacy changes a lot, too, right? Like, there are... Through my time playing Magic, this card would have been a legacy enabler. It wouldn't be now, but I think that... I don't know. I think that... I might actually brew with this in Modern and Legacy.
Well, I just want to say this plus Loam, we talked about it a second ago, right? Like, you discard this, you, like, dredge back your Loams, you make some 1-1s, you keep cycling, you discard cards. Like, you can do a lot of cool stuff. So,
yeah. I think this card just does a lot of things, and it passes the theory of words for me.
Yeah. No, and also, you can hit it off a Bloodbraid Elf for all you Jund players out there.
That's right. Bloodbraid Elf might not be so bad in our aggro Loam deck.
Oh man, can we go back to when Bloodbraid Elf ruled the world? That was the best world.
I'm just saying, that seems like a pretty good, of all the things you could cascade into, that doesn't seem like a bad one.
Oh man. Heating up in here, Trey.
Speaking of heating up, my second sleeper is Collector Oofy, which is one in a green for an oof. And it has activated abilities of artifacts cannot be activated. 2/2.
If you didn't think there were enough Stony Silences floating around, just wait, we've got more. They put it on a Planeswalker, they've put it on a creature, they've put it on everything.
Yeah,
Pretty soon it'll just be on street signs on the side of the road. Artifacts go home.
Trey, do you like this card?
I mean, I don't like that it exists.
Really? I don't know. Like, I think that, like, Null Rod across, like, all the colors that can do it should be able to do it. I don't know.
Well, that already happened with Null Rod. You could just play it whatever color you wanted.
Is Null Rod on the reserve list?
Null Rod's not in Modern.
I know. Which is great.
It is weird they printed a bunch of Null Rod type cards, and this they had a reprint set, and they decided not to print Null Rod. It's kind of a statement like, we don't want it that universal.
I don't think they want Null Rod in Modern.
Yeah. Well, they've given us a bunch of options. You have to spend 4 mana for it now, but you can get it and have the Karn Daddy. I've done it recently. But Collector Oofy, or Oof, however you're supposed to say this card's name, it's great because it is Null Rod, but it's Null Rod for, like, Amulet Titan. It's Null Rod for humans. It's Null Rod for Coco decks. It's Null Rod for, like, all the creature decks that play Collector Company. Like, this is it. Like,
I actually think this is just, like, a huge ad for the Collector Company tutor decks. Like, last set we talked about with, I don't know if you guys, were you guys on, or was it me, John, and Seth when we talked about the last set?
It was you three. This is our first set review as a trio.
All right, that's good. I don't know, man. I've been doing this for years.
It's good.
But yeah, I think that, like, you know, Seth and I were pretty impressed with the green tutor from the last set.
Neophon?
Finale of Devastation.
Oh, Finale of Devastation. Like, yeah. Sorry.
And like, I think that, like, this is just people are already paying 4 mana for this effect in Modern. It comes with a card attached to it, but, like, you know, the Finale of Devastation plus this, like, I think they're giving those decks a lot of tools, and just a few more tools, and I think those decks get a lot better.
Yeah, I think like the decks that like want to play this card are traditionally weak to hardened scales too. So it's like nice, like here's your hardened scale thing. And it's like pretty important to remember that like we kind of know the timeline on this set from Twitter and stuff. And this was being designed like right at the beginning through the heyday of KCI. So we're going to see a lot of artifact hate because A, they put some pretty powerful artifacts in here. And B, they look like they were like, hey, if we don't ban it, we at least have this coming in 8 months, right? So
also, nobody's talking about the fact that Volika gets to play this card. Which I don't know why they don't realize. Like, I play Summoner's Pact. I get this card too.
You can put Karn in your deck too, Spence. You play Karn early. Micro sends Lattice people.
I don't know if that'll do much.
Oh yeah, baby. Depends on the artifact deck. But yeah.
I don't hate this. Like, we already play Reclamation Sage. So like I would be happy to test to see if this is better in that deck.
Yeah, or maybe even alongside it, right? Like against the hardened skills matchup, you have that, and then you have this, you have that for Blood Moon.
One of each, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen people play like Reclamation Sage main deck and Titan decks before. And
yeah,
then,
I mean, the white versions of Titan already play Stony Sevens pretty often. Like, not all the time, because they, you know, they play Shatterstorm and stuff like that, but, what's the Fracturing Gust?
Yep.
So, like, you know, it does have slots it's competing with in Valakut specifically. And I think that that's true of a lot of, like, the big mana green decks. I think the same thing is true of Titan. You know, Titan, it loves being a toolbox deck, but you also play other, you know, big impact cards, right?
Yeah, and there are, I mean, like, if you, we'll talk about Titan for 2 seconds, and we'll move on to Trace thing. I don't want to spend all day talking about Amulet Titan. This is, I think, my only Amulet Titan card on the list. That's a miracle, considering our last set review. But like, Dilks didn't play Karn last weekend, right? He wanted to play a different version of the Amulet Titan deck, and Hardened Scales is a bad matchup, and I'm sure he would have loved to have this option in his sideboard. He's like, I don't want to commit all these spots to Karn, but I want to be able to beat Hardened Scales, and that could have been a card instead of having a weak spot. So, just another tool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Trey, I actually don't know either of your cards, so I'm really, really excited about this.
Welcome to Set Reviews with Trey.
That's right. That's why they're sleepers.
Yeah.
My first sleeper is a literal sleeper, Merit Lage's Slumber. So it's already sleeping.
All right.
Is that the whole thing? So what's the next card?
No. You know, Merit Lage's Slumber, if you don't know this set, they're going back to snow permanents. Since Cold Snap and Ice Age were such popular sets the first time around, we're doing snow permanents.
I actually really love snow permanents for what it's
worth. I mean, the snow permanents are awesome. I like them too. I'm just saying Cold Snap and Ice Age were not very popular sets overall.
Sure.
But so this is a blue colorless legendary snow enchantment. Whenever Merit Lage's Slumber or another snow permanent enters the battlefield under your control, you scry one. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more snow permanents, you sacrifice this enchantment and you get a Merit Lage, a 2020 flying indestructible black avatar creature token. So it has the city's blessing, but for snow permanents. And when you get the city's blessing for snow permanents, you release a giant kraken.
So are we thinking like blue white snow permanent control with like the new snow removal spell, stuff like that?
Right, yeah, I think that, you know, if there is an archetype of that that is going to be viable, if there's enough of that stuff around now, then I think that this is something that's an interesting thing, especially because you're already going to be incentivized to be playing a bunch of snow lands in order to turn the other new removal spells on and to do these other things. Right. And that, you know, from the time like when Thassa was there in the blue devotion decks, like repeatable scry in a blue deck is very useful, very powerful. And, you know, I'm curious to see whether or not that effect by itself is enough to make this something that's viable.
Hot take. Like, really, really hot take.
If you're going to say Thassa was bad in its deck, I'm just going to leave the podcast.
No.
Okay, that's what I thought I was going.
So, like, this enchantment by itself on the Scry one, when you play, like, Scry lands and stuff like that, like, plus, you know, being a win condition long game, is, like, really similar to another 2-mana enchantment that flips and like has long game implications.
Argyle's Bloodfest.
Yeah. but for legitimate thing, I actually wonder if you can afford to, like, if this card is legitimately great, I would not be surprised if there was a blue white control deck in Modern right now that got to do this kind of stuff. I think that not Path to Exile. Swords to Plowshares has been like a pretty. I think it's on the up in Legacy right now, and because it's on the up, you could argue that like I don't know. I actually wonder if this could be a Legacy deck. To sound like extremely crazy.
So you just play Miracles, but instead of basics, snow basics,
yeah,
and this, and then
snow basics and like
on thin ice.
You're playing like a blue-white control deck in Legacy. Maybe it's not worth, but it's certainly something that's cool and worth testing. But it's definitely possibly good enough in Modern.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, just especially because you know some of the other removal spells that they have that are snow based are also permanent. Based, right? Like the On Thin Ice, the snow enchantment, right? Like
yeah.
you're adding to the number that it's ramping you towards the possible win condition while also just continuing to scry you to more interaction and more things that you need to do. The card's like $2 right now. It's something that's at least interesting as looking at it, especially if you can play things that aren't real win conditions but are win conditions that are helping you do the rest of the things your deck does.
I mean even like a Stoneblade style deck. There's the Frostwalk Bastion that's in this set that's like a snow mainland that's a 2/3 that activates for 2 mana. Like, even in like a Stoneforge Mystic style deck with that, like, I'm actually like legitimately building this deck in my head right now, so I think this card is sweet.
Yeah, that creature lands, I think, actually like part of the reason to play snow. And then there's also a card that kind of works with this that didn't make our list is Hall of Heliod's Generosity, which is Academy Ruins for enchantments. And right. If this thing sacrifices itself, like, that could be good. And with On Thin Ice, that could be powerful. Like, if they answer it, where you maybe have some way to reset it, that's something that could happen. So, there's a lot of cool stuff going on with that card. Trey, what's your next one?
My next card is Hogak, the Arisen Necropolis. I slaughtered that. Hogak, Arisen Necropolis. It is,
that was great.
black-green, hybrid mana, two of those, and then five colorless. A legendary creature avatar. It's an 8/8 trample. It has convoke and delve, and you may cast it from your graveyard.
Dude, you're such an old man magic right now.
You can't spend mana to cast this spell.
Hot take. Unplayable, Trey.
I don't think so. This card's like 250 right now.
Hi.
So this is a sleeper situation. So here's the thing. Like, people have been talking about this deck, talking about this card, and they were looking at it as possible, you know, of like whether or not this was playable in draft or whether or not this was castable.
Wow, that's
where
played in.
I think that this card is interesting in the idea specifically of like the Dredgevine decks that popped up,
yeah,
like last year, right? Because you're already playing Stitcher Supplier, you're playing Gravecrawler, you're playing Bloodghast, you're playing all of these things that you were already playing. And you also cast this from your graveyard if you cast it. So it would count as the second creature to recur Vengevines. And it's the black cost is not something that's hard to convoke out because of all of the other low-cost black creatures that you're playing that are graveyard recursive. And so I think that this might be something that is playable and exists in that situation, in that, you know, you're dredging, you're self-milling, and then you're casting this as a big beater that also brings back Vengevines. It's it's potentially big game.
I think it could be a fine one of in those style decks. Also, when you were saying that, I really would love another team Mythic Championship, similar to that one, like the Legacy Modern Standard. There were a lot of like innovations in Legacy and Modern specifically for that tournament, and I think that like the Dredgevine deck actually came out of people's testing for that specifically. So I would love them to go back to that. So first of all, I love this card. I think this card's super sweet, but I just disagree. I think this card is pretty bad.
If you could spend mana so that the black green part was free and
exactly,
you could just delve or convoke,
it would be insane.
I don't even know if it would break. I don't even know if it'd be good actually. But it would. I could at least talk
really
about
good.
It. I would be willing to talk.
Yeah, I think that having it's pulling you in too many different ways, and I would just assume that. It's not good because of that. But anyway, Mason is even lower on this card than me, and I don't like this card, so that's impressive.
I promise to kill Mason with this card. I guarantee the listeners that I will kill Mason with this card.
I've lost to a lot of that cards. You know, Leona and Arbiter War Leader and Standard has killed me a lot of times. So
here's all I want to say about this card, and Trey, if you want to say anything else before we move on, I'll let you, since, you know, we all got to talk about our cards a good bit. We kind of poo-pooed on you. Is it this card? seems.
I told him his card was like.
I poo pooed on it. I used the royal we. Let me use the royal we here. You know, I think there could be something to this card. The problem is, I don't know if I can consistently cast it, and so I need a deck like Dredgevine where I'm going to hit it, and then it's like I'm putting all this work towards this card. It has to be powerful, and I'm already doing such a powerful thing that I'm like, it just doesn't seem to have a slot, and it's something that I should probably keep an eye on because maybe one day it could be busted if we can consistently put it in play on turn three. But I think the problem is you're just not going to get it to like turn four or five on average normally, and that's just 8/8s in Modern. I would let my opponent put that in play, and this wouldn't be a problem most of the time. You know what I mean?
So hold on. So the fact that you get to cast this from your graveyard,
yeah, that I is think big.
The reason that like the Dredgevine part matters, right? So that is a direction that it's not pulling you in. You don't actually have to draw this card to cast it, meaning that like,
yeah, no, but you still have to find it though.
Did the Dredgevine decks play? They played the Stitcher, zombie, right?
They play Stitcher Supplier and they play Faithless Looting.
Yeah, and Gravecrawler, and they played Bridge from Below to make a bunch of 2/2 zombies that would also cast this.
The real thing for me is though, you still have to find it. Like maybe there's like a Dredge hybrid where we can like actually go through our deck. But one of the problems I've always found with the Vengevine deck is that like it doesn't put cards in the graveyard quick enough for my liking. And as such, because you just have Stitcher Supplier, Faithless Looting, like you need a Dredger, I think. And so maybe that's the trick, right? You play like a couple of Stinkweed Imps or something, and then boom, meet up. I don't know, but
yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I legitimately forgot about this deck. What is the reason this deck got bad?
It's just not that great. It's kind of like an all in glass cannon.
Oh, I mean, it is. It's like a, you know, it was. I mean, I think that's why it came out for the Pro Tour, right? It's like, when people aren't prepared for it, maybe it's because there's so much graveyard hate that like your Glass Cannon graveyard deck is a little bit worse.
But it's less resilient than Dredge overall, sure. And so there was not a lot of incentive to be playing this versus Dredge. And then, after like a very short period of time,
and then Case Guy entered the format, and Case Guy played main deck EE, and that was really powerful against it, and people had graveyard hate for that. And then Case Guy left, but then Arclight Phoenix came in, and they have Thing in the Ice, and they just flip it and do all your work. So it's kind of like, it's just a symptom of the cause, but it is sort of, you know, it's got other things going on with it too, but.
Yeah, certainly interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that deck, like, that was the Greater Gargadon version or something that came out.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think that you don't have to play a Greater Gargadon version. So I don't know, I wonder.
Especially if you have Hogak, Arisen Necropolis.
I've never heard of that card.
It's a sleeper. So, next up's New Kid on the Block. What do you got, Spencer?
Yeah, we already said Seasoned Pyromancer was one of mine. My other is, I think, a card that is getting a lot of talk as people are talking about this card really weirdly to me. But it is Ranger Captain of Eos. So, Ranger Captain of Eos is white. Oh, are you interested in why I thought people were talking weird about it?
No, I was just, I forgot what that card did, and I pulled it up over here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, it's this one, yeah.
White, one for a 3/3 creature human soldier. When it enters the battlefield, you search your library for a creature with a current mana cost one or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library. You can sacrifice it so your opponent can't cast on to your spell this turn. All right, I'm going to tell the podcast a secret, because they won't believe me if they know me, but this is factual. My highest win percentage with any deck I've ever played in Magic that also got me to an ELO rating that was number one in my state was a white aggro deck. And that deck would have loved this card. And that deck was Quest for the Holy Relic Green-White Vengevine. So
I know one of those cards.
Oh, you would have known the other. It was the best deck against Cobblade by a substantial margin before Batterskull was printed. And I just destroyed people. That deck would have loved this card. That deck is not even close to playable in Modern. Sadly, a 1/1 with a +6/+6 enchantment destroy a permanent on turn 3 is just not fast enough for Modern. But I think that this card, while would have been good in that deck, and that's what it reminded me of, is just a good card in like lots of different decks. Being able to, you know, get a little bit of value off of a 3-mana 3/3 is pretty sweet. I'm interested to a lot of people are talking about replacing militia captain with discarding humans.
Oh, bugler.
Bugler.
You're good.
And I think that's interesting. I listened to the game podcast. They talked about how, you know, if you play this early enough, it's totally okay to grab one of your one mana spells. The best ones in that deck being Noble Hierarch and Champion of the Parish. I don't know that that's where I see this card. This card seems pretty good in Legacy specifically to me. It's a disruptive spell for a lot of different decks that can play pretty great cards. I don't know that this fits into humans, but I just think that for me, this really just kind of opens up the door for a lot of different things. It's just a good toolbox card for Galactic Company decks. It's, I don't know, it's sweet.
Well, what did you talk about the bottom half of the card?
The sacrifice it to so opponents can't cast non-creatures.
Yeah, I think that's a very big part of the card.
I do too. That's actually why I don't know that it like matters as much in like humans where you're already. I mean, I guess it makes the matchups that are your good matchups better matchups, but like I don't know that like impacts the deck as much as other decks getting to play this card. Being able to, you know, get this end step, the turn before your opponent combos in something like a Galactic Company deck is like pretty huge game.
That's a big game too. I was just thinking that like Bugler is in for a matchups normally where like they're gonna kill your stuff a bunch. And so you can, like, play this, like, let's go say you go grab a Champion of the Parish, and then you, like, sack it, and it's like, okay, you can't Supreme Verdict me, you can't Wrath me, you can't EE me, right? Like, it gives you, like, a turn to, like, hit them on the next. So, I think it's, like, reasonable to talk about. I once again, I don't know if it's good enough or not. I don't have a lot of strong opinions on this card, but the fact that it is a silence as well makes me at least want to talk about it, because I don't know if I would play it if it was just Ranger of Eos for one mana cards.
Yeah.
Or get one, I should say.
You know, both of my new Kid on the Block cards are just, like, these are just cards that will eventually, I think, see modern play. I think they're specifically printed with enough words on them to just be like, okay, this will just happen eventually.
But I know what this deck is for. This card is for.
What?
I forget its name, but it's the white land that brings back a permanent every turn. If you have seven planes, and then...
Oh, Kabira Crossroads?
No, that's the game two. I played in Amulet Time. Amira the Sky something.
Oh, Amira the Sky Ruin.
Oh.
Yeah, you bring this back, you go get your Soul Sister card, you sack it, they can't cast spells, and you loop it.
You mean it's busted in that deck.
I have heard talk about this in Soul Sister.
Well, yeah, so what you're saying is, so that deck was already playing Ranger of Eos, which is the power creep is real. Ranger of Eos is a 4-mana 3-2.
Ranger of Eos so many times.
Two 1-drops. As a 3-2 for 4 mana. This is a mana cheaper, has a bigger toughness, only gets one creature, but is also a silence. So when he got promoted to captain, I guess he got some skills. I don't know.
I do think this is good, like you said, Spencer. I'm not trying to like downplay that or anything, but it just hit me like, oh, it's so good in that deck.
It's really good in that deck.
I actually don't think it's that's my favorite application for it. I'm really excited for like grabbing Death Shadows with this card. Like,
whoa.
Back in the 2018 OG days, right? Like the first, because in the first GP, didn't Sam Black and Jerry Gratt like have Ranger of Eos in the Death Shadow deck?
They did as a one up, yeah.
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 Yeah. Back when it was still like the four color whatever type nonsense. Also, this gets Hedron Crabs. Just keep that in mind.
Oh, what? Come on, get out of here. Let's go into your new Kids on the Block. You have one that matches my hopeful Mason.
Oh, I was like, I didn't know who was going up here. So my first one is Archmage's Charm. For the sweet, sweet mana cost of blue, you get an instant that says choose one. Counter target spell, target player draws two cards, or gain control of target non-land permanent with converted mana cost one or less. So, baby cryptic command, it's got three different modes, it just seems like a good one of in control decks, and something for merfolk decks to have in their sideboard if they, like, you know, I assume merfolk decks play counter spells. Seems like a powerful counter spell. It's good against creature decks, does stuff. But I think the thing that's cool about this card, the mana cost is restrictive, but I think if you start playing Mystic Gates, which is something that some people have done in blue-white anyways in the past, you can cast this card fairly reliably on turn 3 or 4. It lets you hold up mana, and it interacts in a lot of different ways, and there's a lot of really powerful one-mana things in Modern, and, excuse me, like, mind-controlling something is really powerful, countering a big play is powerful, and just cycling through your deck is powerful. So I think this is just a strong card.
Yeah, I believe this is the preview card for Proving Combatants.
Yes, it is. So
you can go to provingcombatants.com, check out that podcast. They have like a pretty good technical producer.
Yeah, but I got to see this card ahead of time. It was pretty dope.
And you know, this one's sweet to me. Like, you know, I have it in my hopeful. As somebody who really enjoys blue eye control on Modern, I think it's, I don't know. I thought it was really funny that people were just like not impressed by this card, because I saw this card, I was like, oh yeah, this is a one of. Like, this is happening. This is that deck already loves one ofs, and this is the one of for blue white control.
It's really strong, right? And like Dovin's Veto makes things kind of weird. Like, there's like a pressure on counter spells right now, but like, this is so flexible that unlike Dovin's Veto, and like, you get paired against humans, you're like, oh Lord, let me hit like something, please, you know, or like, let me discard this to hand size because I'm about to win. You know,
oh man, like, grabbing their, you know, 5/5 champion of the parish and like being like, yeah, go ahead, and they're like, oh man, I need to draw one of my bounce reflector mages, or like, I don't even know how I'm gonna kill this post board. Like, I don't know, that sounds really sweet to me. The draw two cards option is perfect for that deck as a one of option. The deck, you know, in a lot of matchups just kinda wants to draw cards and make sure that it stays ahead. Yeah, I think this card is a slam deck one of. Just actually not. I put it in my hopeful because I wanted to talk about it, but I just highly doubt this card won't end up as a one of in that deck specifically.
I agree. Trey, do you want to talk about this card any?
I mean, this card, I don't know. I'm on the fence as to whether this card's going to see as much play as you think that it is.
We're talking about one of play.
I know, but like
we're not over here like, so mono blue control plays for this.
I get it. But you know, I don't know that a harder to cast cancel and divination and I'm just saying. I mean,
what's the Necropolis card called? It's like harder to cast Gurmag Angler. He's like, give me that in my decks.
Yeah. No, that one can cast from the graveyard.
I'm just joking, buddy. Keep talking. Yeah, it's like Nether Spirit.
Yeah. So I don't know. They're already like the mana cost is not that restrictive for the blue white deck specifically, because they're already playing Cryptic. But they've already even been shaving on Cryptic, and they've also been shaving away from counterspells overall because of the rise of Dovin's Veto, you know, and the increased amount of planeswalkers and things that they have access to. So I don't know if that deck is in the market for a 3-mana counterspell. That's probably part of the concern more than anything else in relation to the card.
I don't know if that's the reason. Like, I know that Dovin's Veto is huge, but I also think, like, the other cards that deck got is like a pretty big deal. When you look at the planeswalkers and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, they've been cutting counterspells and playing Narsets, right? Like, and playing Teferis and
sure.
They're just playing less counterspells overall.
But I think that's the reason more than anything else, right? That is actually a concern with this card, is it's competing with 2-3-mana planeswalkers that are, in my opinion, shaping Modern right now. Like, I think the blue eye control deck was already one of the best decks, and it just, you know, if we look at the list that just got first place in the classic, it played 4 Narset and 1 Teferi, so just, you know, pretty huge amounts of 3-mana planeswalkers, playing 9 planeswalkers total. But, you know, a lot of lists play 3 Snapcaster Mages. I think this is a fine replacement for, like, one of the Snapcaster Mages overall.
Yeah, maybe, and again, like I said, we'll see how it plays out, but it costing 3 mana and is something I think is a real consideration for that deck. And the fact that they've been cutting some of the 2-mana counter spells just to a lower counter spell amount overall, you know, this card does have some versatility, and even like weird things, like it's an answer to Amulet in game one, in the sense like you play an Amulet and you can take it as the blue player so that you just don't have access to it. Like, it does weird things that can just come up in different situations. So it's definitely versatile, but I just wonder of whether or not, when there are so many different tools available, if this is going to justify a spot.
They're not cap cutting 2-mana counter spells though, right? Like, they're just playing Dovin's Vetoes over the mana leak and the negate. Right?
It depends on the list, yeah. But so some people are, some people aren't. It's still kind of in flux. Look, so the list that won the classic was doing what you just said, but there was another list that did well at the open and still had mana leak and a logic knot, I believe.
Well, yeah, like the Nina list from the modern premiere played 1 Veto, 1 logic knot, 1 mana leak still, and like, that's the same number. Like, it was always playing 3 2-mana ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the numbers changed. It's just more vetoes for some people.
Sure, that's fair. I'm going to say this, because we should probably move on. in response to like the canceled divination mind control thing or whatever, Shatter, Raise Dead, Shock, Raven's Crime was a card that people thought wasn't going to be good, and Kolaghan's Command is one of the best value cards we have. Now, Kolaghan's Command is way different. Like, so Engine with Snapcaster, I get that, but...
Blue
is also a thing, but like, but versatile cards are powerful, and it's something that you should at least, like, keep an eye on.
Definitely so.
Yep. Alright, my next one.
Goblin Engineer, baby.
It's a sneaky boy. One in a red. For Goblin Engineer. He's a Goblin Artificer. When Goblin Engineer enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an artifact card, put in your graveyard, and then shuffle your library. And then for one in a red, you can sacrifice an artifact, return target artifact card, and convert mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield as a 1/2. A lot of cool things you can do with this. So while it only returns artifacts that cost 3 or less, it does allow you to put bigger artifacts in your graveyard if you have some sort of reanimate thing, or you need an artifact there for later in the game, or just some general nonsense. But also, things that this finds that are really strong are like Ensnaring Bridge, Dampening Sphere, Sorcerer's Spyglass, and there's one more that I forgot right now, Torpor Orb. So those are some cards you can go find with this card. I think this card is just like reasonable and powerful and has the potential to be really busted. It's like in tune.
You don't have an opinion on this one?
No. Yeah.
Like, this is just so far out of my area of expertise. This is like the type of card that I'll figure out how good it is when somebody else does something with it.
That's fair. Trey, do you have anything you want to say on this one? I don't have anything.
I think that this card's interesting. You know, there are a lot of things about it that I think it asks of you in order for it to be good. Like, you know, you have to be playing other artifacts in order to really get value out of it. You have to build your deck certainly around it in order to get value out of it. But it does give you a different toolbox. It competes against other toolboxy cards like Whir and Reshape and those types of things. If you are, interested in that type of an effect. It's like a fixed Goblin Welder, right? Like Goblin Welder in Legacy lets you like go up and just get insane things from sacking artifacts to get big things.
I forgot to mention this does get Sword of the Meek, which is pretty big. Like it works with a sword combo.
For sure.
Yeah,
That's definitely good, especially considering the a card I'm sure that we're going to talk about later in regards to Sword of the Meek.
Yeah.
So this card's interesting. I'm not yet sure of whether or not it's going to be something that's broken. I know that our friend Ellison has made a bunch of lists with this card. He can't stop himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say. I don't think this card deserves a lot of time. Trey, I think it's a cool card. Trey, what's your new kid on the block?
Oh, they got a bunch of hits. My first new kid on the block is a new Planeswalker somehow, even though we just came off War of the Spark where there are 36 Planeswalkers, and we now have a new Planeswalker that has never been seen before, which is Rin and Six.
Can I just say that this card has 3 abilities, it's a mythic, and everybody who said that this wouldn't happen again was wrong?
Right. Yeah. So this is a 2-mana Planeswalker, and its plus ability is return up to 1 target land from your graveyard to your hand. -1 is it deals 1 damage to any target. And -7 is you get an emblem with instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard have retrace, and it comes in at 3 loyalty. So this card's interesting, you know, where it's going to fit into the format yet, I don't know, but there are things like there's the new bear card that you were just talking about, like that. This is awesome with that. Like you just discard a land, make a 2/2 and bring it back to your hand and activate. With all of the new 3-mana Planeswalkers that are there in control decks, a lot of those tick down to 1, and this can pick off things. It's, can defend itself, even though it's only the 1 damage, I think, better than what it looks like initially. And giving your stuff retrace, if you ever get to that point, is insane. That's going to be big game.
What does retrace do, Trey?
So retrace is that you can discard a land in order to cast a spell from your graveyard.
Yep.
But I think this card's really interesting. I mean, you know, like people have talked about it in like Ponza type decks and you know, things like that, like getting to like Ghost Quarter lock people by just returning and playing that over and over and over again.
Hot take, this is the best 2-mana Planeswalker of all time, and it's not close.
Jason's Prodigy.
Yeah, Jason's Prodigy would like a word.
This this one is really good.
Legendary creature.
Oh, whoa, my heart. I can't handle this debate again.
this card is just good. Like I think that this card will see play somewhere at some point in time. Like I just don't doubt it.
Yeah, we talked about Loam stuff. Like I get that this card's a lot better on the play than the draw, and what I'm about to say to people, but, like, you're against humans. They go turn one noble and or champion. You go turn two this. Boom! Kill your thing. The game is, like, drastically different than it could have ever been before. And we have the Cycle Lands, too, which we haven't talked about yet, but, like, there are decks that are going to want to play the Cycle Lands, and that plays really well with this. The one-mana Cycle Lands. We have the new ones, so. I guess the old ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is old is new again.
Yeah.
Unsettled Mariner is next for you, Trey. It's your other new kid on the block. What does that do?
That's right. So this is a blue-white shapeshifter, a.k.a. human. this card has every creature type. It's a 2/2. Whenever you or a permanent you control becomes the target of a spell or ability, an opponent controls counter that spell or ability unless its controller pays one. Yeah, so, you know, this is, add this with your Thalias and just make everybody really hard to kill all the time.
I really hate tax cards. Like, I think they're just the least fun way to win at Magic.
I
would rather my opponent have to. What?
Mason loves a tax card.
That's fine. Mason has lots of bad opinions. I actually would rather lose to Plow Under than something like this. I think this is just annoying. It makes it, like, I don't know. Frost Titan effect should not be on 2/2s. That's just my opinion.
I think it's like a lightning rod the first time, right? And then if it gets you off file, you get wrecked.
Why is that better?
I'm just saying it's not like a permanent effect, right? Like, it is answerable. You know what I mean? Like,
your argument that this is okay is that it dies to Doomblade, though. Like,
no, I mean, sure, but, like, it's also like they want to print something that's good for creature decks, right? That, like, protects them from spot removal, and it's not something that's, like, busted and you can't beat. I think the most egregious part of this card is it isn't legendary, so they can stack up.
You know what's funny about that is, like, cards like the one that gives all the white instant from Eldrazi that gave all of your creatures protection from a color of your choice until end of turn. Like, I would rather have that than this.
White? Oh, Brave the Elements?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Alright.
Like that card is interesting to me. It makes cool decks exist. It does multiple things, right? It lets your creatures attack through other creatures. Like, this is only good against one style or a couple styles of decks, and then it's, like, kind of game-ending in certain spots for no reason at all. Like, I don't know. I just don't like tax effects. I've never said that on the show before. Just thought I'd say it.
This guy's got, like, purple sludge on his elbow. That's pretty interesting.
He's a shapeshifter. He's like a Ditto.
He should actually really get that checked out. That is not healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't believe the card's not legendary. That's all I'm going to say. Like, how many times have you, like, looked at the second Thalia in your hand? You're like, if I played this right now, my Mardu Pyromancer opponent is destroyed again. You know, and it's like, I can't. And they kill it, and you just replay it. But this one, you're like, bop, 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 bop.
Turning Lightning Strike into, or learning Lightning Bolt into Lightning Strike is kind of just like, I mean, you're doubling the mana of their one mana removal spells. And I don't think, I'm going to just be honest, I don't think Wizards realize how powerful that is. I think that's an effect that, like, they're too willing to keep doing. And I just think it's the least fun thing that R&D still does today.
It's going to be, like Mason said, it's going to be a real big game when you get this in play with a bunch of them.
Well, yeah, if you just, like, I'm not, like, it, like, a lot of these cards are making me want to play Collective Company Humans again. Like, the format's slowing down anyway a little bit, so it's not that bad, like, crazy to think that, like, these Aether Vials kind of look bad, like, let's just play Collective Companies instead.
That's a Trey Escher.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable, and if you just hit two of these off of a Collective Company against a deck playing Doomblades, like, they just lose. Like, they can't actually do anything.
Speaking of losing, let's talk about near misses.
Trey, do you want to start us off? You want to backwards snake it here?
Yeah, let's make it, baby. Sure.
The first one is one that I'll talk about that a lot of people have been talking about with excitement, and I think that excitement is probably misplaced. And that is Echo of Eons. Echo of Eons is blue-blue 4. Sorcery, each player shuffles their hand and graveyard into the library and draws 7 cards. And then it has Flashback, Time Twister.
How much is the Flashback?
Okay. Yeah, so blue and 2 for the same effect. And so the reason that everyone's been getting excited about this, I've been seeing a lot of talk about it, is people talking about you can flash this back for blue and 2, flash this back for blue and 2. Okay, but if you're the type of deck that's trying to get this into your graveyard and not cast it from your hand, then you're going to want your graveyard to be around and not shuffle your graveyard back into your deck. So I don't know what deck is looking for this effect. Like, drawing seven cards is extremely powerful. Drawing seven cards for three mana is extremely powerful. But I don't know where this card's fitting in, where you're casting it from your graveyard and want it to be there, but don't want the rest of your graveyard to be there.
So I actually agree with everything Trey just said.
Yeah,
I
would, yeah.
So here's the thing with this card. This card is either going to get banned or it's going to see no play. And I don't like cards like that. It's like, so Time Twister is probably the most overrated Magic card of all time. Like, it's good in, like, one or three situations. And it's really, really good in those situations and kind of just bad. Just whatever all the other times. Mason was, you know, just a young 7-year-old child when the 7-mana version of this card was printed in Standard and was $30 or something off the press. I don't know. I don't know the reason for this other than maybe it's for Commander players, but I just think that this card is either going to break some deck wide open and get banned or just not going to be a part of the format.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that you would want a copy of this in Legacy High Tide.
Well, but... Legacy Stuck? If we're talking Legacy, no, LED, it's very powerful. I thought about
Legacy High Tide because of LED, but I don't, like, it's not better than Time Spiral. So, like, are you wanting your fifth Time Spiral?
I don't know about, is that for High Tide?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I don't know about that. Trey plays actual High Tide, so.
Yeah.
I would play all the Time Spirals.
That certainly was the first thing that I thought of was High Tide for this, but I don't know. I just think this won't happen. If it does, it won't happen for very long.
I think actual Storm just plays it on Legacy, and they just LED. Now, I don't know if that's better than what they are doing right now, but I think that's something to talk about, at least. And, like, I think WotC had to know.
But that's what I'm saying, is, like, if this is good in Legacy Storm, mm-hmm. it's probably just insane in Legacy Storm, and then at that point it's like, all right, Storm is too good.
Yep, ban something.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's fine to print cards that can, like, do that, but I don't know. I think you're right. It's probably something that's supposed to be, like, exciting for modern players to brew, and it won't be good enough. Legacy is, like, hit by that, which is an unfortunate side effect, but, like, WotC can't, you know. There's, like, things at play, like, you could say they can design for one, they can say they don't, whatever. And then for Commander players, I'm sure it's great. Like, everyone draw seven cards. Hooray! Yeah,
Your next card is super interesting to me, Trey. Why don't you talk about that?
So my next card is not a single card. The near miss is all of the ninjutsu cards in the set. I really love ninjutsu as a mechanic. I think that ninjutsu is a really cool mechanic, and I was really happy to see them going back to it. But I haven't really seen anything that's here that would make me want to play any of these cards. And I wanted there to be something exciting from a ninjutsu standpoint.
I agree. I looked at every single ninjutsu card really being helpful. And, you know, as you and I were younger during the ninja pirate phase of life, Trey, you know, we really, you know, love the ninja pirate thing. And Mason, who was in diapers during the ninja pirate phase of life, just didn't get to experience that.
It just makes me sad. I wanted it to be a fun time. Ninjutsu's awesome. But no, it didn't get there. It's all too expensive. Like, there are there are some interesting effects, but they're all, like, very costly.
Is there one that you thought was the closest?
There's one that's the 5/4.
Sure.
That I don't remember. Here it is. It's Fallen Shinobi. It's a black-blue 3/5/4 ninjutsu for 4. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, that player exiles the top 2 cards of their library, and then you can play those cards without paying their mana cost until end of turn. Like, that's probably the closest one.
Yeah. Mason, you've played Pauper, right? So you've played with Ninjutsu before?
Yeah, I've played Ninja of the Deep Hour a lot. That card's great. Like, that blue-black card reminds me of that one in a weird way, but you play with, like, your opponent's stuff, which is cool. But I don't know. Like,
it costs 4 mana.
Yeah, it costs. I don't know. I saw this more as, like, a, hey, we have a chance to put ninjas in a set for people that like ninjas, so we're gonna put them here for limited. And if they do something constructed, that's cool. So
your near miss is were both upsetting to me because I also think they're misses.
All right, so my first one is Astral Drift, which is 2 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever you cycle Astral Drift or cycle another card while Astral Drift is on the battlefield, you may exile a target creature. If you do, return that creature to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step and has cycling for 2 and a white. This is Astral Slide, I believe, is the name of the original card.
It's one-sided Astral Slide and has cycling instead.
Yeah, and it, like, the cycle works, because Astral Slide didn't cycle, when it cycled, it didn't trigger before, right? Like, that's the big difference?
Well, Astral Slide did not have cycling.
Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. I thought it had, but it didn't. Gotcha.
No, when I say one-sided, the Astral Slide, you know, you exile a target creature. If you do, return that creature to the battlefield under your control. Astral Slide, I think, let you do either, right?
This lets you do either side of the battlefield.
This lets you do either. This is literally Astral Slide just with cycling.
Yeah, this is better Astral Slide in every way, is my understanding.
Yeah, it's just Astral Slide with it also having cycling.
If they have a Narset in play, it's worse because you could be tricked into cycling it. That's the only way. Don't at me on Twitter. So here's the thing. I've heard that deck is super cool, and I know like people really like the deck from back in the day. And I wanted to like it, and this card, when it got spoiled, people were like, it got spoiled a little early, unfortunately, and people got really hyped for it. I just don't know, like, what we're doing in Modern, where, like, this is it. And so, like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of sweet decks with this, but I'm just probably never going to play against this deck.
Can we shout out Mythic Spoiler, by the way?
Sure, I'm on there right now. So,
Mythic Spoiler, during the beginning of this preview season, they had a button in the top that let you see officially previewed cards and not officially previewed cards. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, like, really sweet and kind. And I just want to give Mythic Spoiler kind of a huge shout-out for making that feature on their website. I think it really helps small content creators. And, yeah, shout-out to Mythic Spoiler for doing that.
Yeah, I didn't even see that. I thought they just, like, straight up cut them out, nope. Like the unofficial ones. And so I was like, oh, cool.
There was a button at the top of the website where you could click and switch off. And I think that's really cool. Shout out to them for caring about small content creators. You all should care about small content creators. And when Wizards gives them a preview card, you know, make sure to promote those rather than leaf cards. So.
Yeah.
This card I wanted to be great. The old deck has a lot of nostalgia about it, but one of the drawbacks to it was that it was slow. It was very consistent. It was very powerful, but it was slow. And being slow is not a great place to be for your combo deck in Modern right now.
Can't wait to draft around this card.
My first thought around this card is that we didn't have the cycle lands, the single colored ones, when this card was spoiled, so I thought that it would be a near miss. But them being in the set is interesting. I think it still means that this is just a really sweet draft archetype for this set, more than anything. But we'll see. One of my near misses also would have had cycling had I had an extra one in the even. So, I don't know.
Alright, well my last near miss is Ice Fang Codal? Quaddle? How do you...
Codal.
Codal? I was right the first time, dang.
You got it.
Alright, well for blue and a green, you get a snow creature snake with flash flying. Ice Fang Codal enters the battlefield, you draw a card. And then Ice Fang Codal has death touch as long as you control at least 3 other snow permanents. So, here's the thing. Yeah, so it's going to be Baleful Strix most of the time, right? If you have these snow permanents. I just think there's maybe a snow deck, but I don't know if this card's of the Modern power level. So I'm curious what y'all think. I know a lot of people, I think Baleful Strix is too strong for Modern, but I'm not sure if Baleful Strix with hoops is too strong.
Well, here's the thing that
I know Spencer doesn't agree with Baleful Strix is too strong for Modern.
I really like the idea of this card, and I really like the idea of a snow deck. But if there is a snow deck in Modern, I don't think that it's blue-green. That's part of the concern, too, is the color combination of what's going on here, I think, limits its ability to see play.
Yeah, I think you're right, Trey. I think that, first of all, I think that the snow permanence deck would probably be closer to like a blue-white control deck than a, you know, it needs to be a deck that is advantaged from having a lot of lands in play. Luckily, Mason, we have an editing issue that caused me to calm down from when Trey was talking.
We lost the episode, everyone. Don't worry, we got it.
But this card is like offensive to me. There was like one card I wanted in this set. A lot of people wanted something like Force of Will, and I would have accepted Force of Will, but I really actually thought that Baleful Strix would be just an amazing addition to Modern. So here's the thing. I just want cards that are good at slowing games down in Modern. Like, it, like, there's a world in which you print Baleful Strix and it doesn't see play in Modern right now. And if it does see play, it changes the format. But I just think it changes it for the better. Like, you can sit there and say it's warping, but I'm okay with warping Modern. Like, I don't like Modern. I think that the majority of players that play Magic the Gathering for dollar bills don't like Modern. And it's because cards like Baleful Strix don't exist in it. They, you know, you don't just get to slow the game down, make more decisions. And it's not like playing fast games of Magic is bad. And that's not even what I'm saying. I don't understand making me jump through hoops for a card that could legitimately benefit the format. I don't know. It just bugs me a lot.
To be fair, in the blue, like in a blue green deck, it is just Baleful Strix, right? Because like you have land this,
right? If you have basics,
yeah. Well, if you're playing a snow deck, you're locked in on basics. That's how it'd be.
It's not the same though. Like I should just be able to play like a blue black mid range. It just bugs me.
Here's my hot take about all this. I have some opinions on, like, me and Spencer disagree on Baleful Strix, but I think if you put Baleful Strix in the format, what you do is you make combo decks better, you don't make the fair decks better, the combo decks just beat you. That's what I think happens ultimately, and I think Modern becomes even worse off. That's my hot take. I don't want to debate that for hours.
It just means that Baleful Strix isn't playable, so why can't you have it in the format?
Other
like,
reasons.
If your take is that Baleful Strix isn't playable, then it doesn't matter. Should just be in the format.
That's not my take. My take is Baleful Strix is playable, but because it's being played, because when one card gets playable, other things change, right? And so, like, I think it is playable. I think it is warping. It's like what Spencer says. I know he disagrees. I don't want to go into that too much. I'm just saying it does that, and then because of that, you get these combo decks, which are the things people don't like about Modern, is getting spaghettied a bunch, and I think that makes them the thing to do.
Sure.
And because I don't think you can play, like, the aggressive decks that will punish it, because you're going to run into people who are like, I'd rather lose to the combo deck than ever not play Baleful Strix. You know what I mean? Like, those kind of things happen, so.
All right, well, you're going to minor mistakes.
We should do a video by that way later, Spencer. Like, talk about that, like a one-on-one one. That would be fun.
All right. We have Prismatic Vista is my first near miss. I talked to a Wizards employee about this card in depth for, you know, about 20 or 30 minutes. And honestly, this is one that is not good enough for Modern, but I think just would be a great standard card. This card is another one that kind of makes me sad, because I just think that, like, this is a great every 2 years in the standard card, or every, you know, 3 years in the standard card. I don't know.
What is the card?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Just read it. Prismatic Vista is a land. You can pay one life and sacrifice it. Just search your life for a basic land card and put it on the battlefield. So it's like a fetch land for only basics, and they come into play untapped.
It's like untapped Evolving Wilds for a life.
Yep. Yeah.
The opinion of the Wizards employee that I spoke to was that they don't want that much shuffling in standard, and I lost it.
Yeah, I'm laughing because me and Spencer also had this conversation, but I didn't know we had the conversation with the Wizard. I have a question, Spencer, a little behind the scenes. Was that before or after our convo?
It was after.
It was after? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I was just curious.
I just strongly disagree with that. I just think that, like, adding a minute and a half to games is, like, totally fine if people... Like, if you just penalized actual slow play, it wouldn't matter. So, you know, either play online or penalize actual slow play. I think this card is sweet. I'm really sad that it won't see Modern play and, you know, that it could... I mean, one thing it does do is it gives you a dual land for your Snow Basic decks. So yeah. That's cool. But other than that, yeah, I just think that it's... I don't know. It's upsetting.
Yeah, I think it's a nice, cheap fetch land. Like, if you're getting into Modern, Modern's really expensive. And, like, if your deck plays a lot of basics, and, like, some of the black-green decks, for example, only have, like, two Overgrown Tombs. And, like, Verdant Catacombs expensive. $240, you get four of them. You can have, like, one and three of this. And, like, that's nice to have in the format. It's, like, a nice budget option for players. And I think that's really cool. But I agree. I think it's going to miss. I do think in Legacy, it's, like, got some cool potential or whatever. Like, if you want more fetch lands, or, like, play around Fifth Needle for whatever reason in your blue-white Miracles deck, this is good enough because you play only, like, one non-basic land in that deck anyway. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Right.
I think this card's awesome. Yeah. I think that this
card... it's sweet. Yeah. That's why I'm sad it's not in standard.
Yep. I have built decks with this in Modern, by the way, since it's coming out. But they're snow decks, so I mean, it's kind of GE face.
Should we talk about the second most overrated card in Magic history?
Chidi face?
No.
Oh, okay.
Kess Descendant Mage. So this card is a reprint. It comes from Commander. It's one, a blue, a black, and a red for a 3/4 flyer. Whenever, during each of your turns, you may cast an instant card from your graveyard. If it was cast this way, put it in your exile instead. All right.
So it lets you snapcast every turn, right? Is that what it does?
Yeah. Okay. So people lost their minds when this card was spoiled. They said it was going to be just this insane card in Legacy. It wasn't. And it will not be in Modern for the exact same reason. If you want a 4-mana card that gives you turn-by-turn card advantage in a blue deck, you are not playing this over Jace the Mind Sculptor. It is not happening. End of story. That, like, it will always miss because it will always compete with Jace the Mind Sculptor at its mana cost. And, the thing is that if you're going to play a Grixis deck that wants to go as long as this card and Jace want you to go, like, you will change your mana base to play the strictly better card. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a one of in some kind of Modern Grixis deck, but I just don't see it. It's just worse than Jace.
As the resident lover of all things Grixis, I can't see a reason that I would ever play this card in any deck.
Yeah. People were... this is like the most, I think, hype has been wrong about a card. And luckily we're not seeing it this time because everybody got burned on the Jace the Mind Sculptor versus this battle before. But I hope that people will still recognize this is just a worse Jace the Mind Sculptor.
I think the card's really cool. And I think I'd have fun playing it, but I don't think it's priced to move in Modern. If it cast a card for free, I'd be in. If it was like 2 or less CMC, cast it for free, I'd be all about this card. But fortunately,
that would be interesting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this card makes me spend mana. Although I think it's dope, and I'm gonna see some cool decks playing it.
It is cool that you get to cast the card the turn you play it, right? It's not like during your upkeep. It's just during your turn you can do that.
Yeah. It's also nice because it's not like you have to target something, like kind of like what you're going along with, right? So your opponent plays around it. It's like, hey, I've got Path, Spell, Snare, Mana Leak, Cake, right. Command. Figure it out, you know?
Right. So for that reason, maybe it could be a one-of, but I think it's just competing at a very competitive spot in the curve in those older formats.
Yeah. It seems like part of the reason you might want to play it in Legacy is because it can block Delver efficiently, and that's just not a thing in Modern. So it blocks Mantis Rider. Until they play Thalia's Lieutenant.
It kind of blocks Mantis Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah, it so always blocks Rider, just doesn't do it well is the real question.
Our next category is Hopeful, which is kind of the reverse of what we just did, where like we kind of wanted to see those cards see play. These are the ones that we want to see play that we think will, or that we really do hope will. We already talked about Archmage's Charm, which was mine. Next up is Force of Negation for me. This card is a blue one. And it's got a lot of text, Mason. It's an instant. And it's negate force of will, except that you can only cast it during your turn.
For free. During your,
for free.
Yeah, for free. It's your opponent's turn, by the way, not your turn.
Oh, you're...
And right, it exiles the spell, but yeah.
So does force of will.
Force will does not exile the spell upon resolution. The spell that you counter is exiled with force of negation.
Oh, this exiles the spell. I didn't really understand that.
Yeah.
So if it's your turn, you might exile a blue card from your hand instead of paying this card mana cost. If it's not your turn. Sorry, I read this wrong 7 times.
It's all good. No worries.
It does what I want it to do. I'm just saying it wrong.
Yeah, no worries.
Counter target non-creature spell. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into its own screen. All right. So I think this card is just like a good safety valve for the format. I wish it was Force of Will, but I'm hopeful that it just kind of keeps insane decks in check. And, you know, I don't know. It's like a fine sideboard card that could do that. And maybe it's a fine mana card. It's a little bit harder with, like, the format slowing down already. So I think this card might take time to fluctuate into the format if it does. But I'm hopeful that it just kind of keeps stupid decks from existing.
Yeah, I think this card's perfect in the design space for Modern of, like, it's Force of Will, but only for nonsense.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it only checks nonsense, but it checks nonsense very effectively. And I think it is going to be a sideboard card only. I would be surprised if it ever showed up in the main deck of anything. But I think it's a perfect design sideboard card for Modern. Yeah. If you wanted to try to have a free counterspell in Modern, I think this is the one you can have.
Yeah, I think its existence makes it so that if it ever needs to be main decked, right, the format's crazy, then that makes that other deck die down really quick, and we get back to equilibrium very quickly. And I think this is great because, like, decks like Neoform before, like, the real cost before is just mulliganing, right, and, like, variance hitting you. And now there's another real cost where it's like, hey, you could just get stopped. Like, that's another reason not to play that deck. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Next up, Mason, if we're snaking back, we have your... So, Isla's Influence we've already talked about. What is your next sleeper?
So, my next hopeful...
Hopeful, sorry.
Yeah, you're good. Is Dead of Winter, which is a black... I believe it's sorcery. I'm pulling it up right now because I was a little late to the gun here. That says non-snow creatures get minus... let me read this exactly. All non-snow creatures get minus X until end of turn, or X is the number of snow permanents you control for 2 and a black sorcery. So I believe the card's called Mutilate, where it's like minus X is equal to the number of swamps or something like that is the OG card. But basically, this is like, normally if you're the snow deck, this is one-sided, like, Wrath of God against creature decks, for example, whatever. Like, you will kill everything. It gets around indestructible, gets around nonsense. I don't know if it's going to make the cut. I think it might just be too slow, and at 3 mana for -3/-3 might not be good enough if you're just like a snow deck, go land. With, I guess, with Ice Fang Quaddle and the Astral, whatever, the bobble that draws a card and that fixes your mana, it can be like -4/-4, -5/-5. That's a big get. It's something that like a snow control deck might want to play. We talked a lot about how there's a lot of really good blue and white snow cards, but you could maybe splash black for this, and I think it's just a card that has a chance, and I wanted to see play. I think it'd be really cool.
I think this card is sweet. I think this is a pretty good hopeful.
Yeah. Trey, do you have any thoughts on this? I know you're looking at the Merit Lage card before. Is this something that, like, maybe you have, like, a small black splash with your Vistas and your fetch lands? Where...
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to be messing around with the snow control deck a lot and trying to see what it is that's there, because it's just, I think it's cool. It's intriguing to me. Also, we spend a lot of time in Standard playing, messing around with Gates Matters. And so, like, having a different kind of thing like this is the Gates Ablaze for Modern, right? And
I didn't
so,
think of it like that, but yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, it really is accessible.
It's like better. Yeah, it's like actually better than Gates Ablaze in a weird way.
Better than Gates Ablaze. Although Gates Ablaze was also one-sided most of the time because your rams were always bigger than however much damage Gates Ablaze did.
Well, right? But minusing is better than damaging most of the time,
oh,
right?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a strict upgrade, but I think it operates in the deck in a very similar way. And so that's something that's exciting because we saw the power level of what that could do in that deck.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's cool about this card, specifically when you think about something like a blue-white snow control deck, is that you know having it being single-colored, it's pretty great when you think about your mana base is going to look something like, you know, 4 Vista, 4, and then 4 white-black fetches, 4 blue-white fetches, 4, black-blue fetches. As long as you're, playing something along the line, the lines of, a single or a double swamp, you can probably afford that. I don't know, it's something that's interesting about, it's really expensive mana bases, though, when I'm, like, thinking about these mana bases for these control decks.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to rely on, like, almost like Legacy. Well, Legacy Miracle still has a bunch of fetch lands, but it has, like, a lot of basics relative to the format, right? And, like, a lot of non-fetches.
This would probably play more than that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. So I think you have to play more. So I think, like, instead of doing 4/4, like Flinter said, you probably have to, like, cut some difference and do, like, 2/2/2s on those kind of things. Minus Vista. It's like, Vista, in theory, is your best fetch land.
Vista would be your best one in that deck.
Yep. So I think it's really cool. I think there's a lot of things that you can do. Like this is a powerful card. This will be really good against, like, creature decks, like human spirits, nonsense decks, whatever. Someone's trying to play on the battlefield, Dead of Winter will get them. And by the way, beautiful name. Dead of Winter. That's an all-star. Great.
What's death can never die? Next up, we have the first sliver. This is your hopeful, Trey.
That's right.
It's Wooburg for a legendary sliver with Cascade, and then slivers you have Cascade. It's a 7/7, and I don't know if you're going Old Man Magic on me right now, but what?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I don't know whether or not this card's good, but the sliver deck has been hanging around the fringes of Modern now for a while. And it's still something seeing play. I mean, there's still things that are happening with it. And there are some new powerful slivers. And the idea of your slivers coming in for free, cascading, and just being able to build up a momentum with that, I don't know whether or not that's going to be good enough, but I'm hopeful that it is, because that's a thing that I would like to explore and to look at. Because slivers get out of hand very quickly with all of the different effects going on everything, and zerging people out with the first sliver seems fun.
Zerging people out does sound fun. Cloud Shredder sliver will almost be my helpful list. The thing is it wasn't the best sliver deck banned.
What does Cloud Shredder sliver do for people at home, by the way?
That's the one that gives your slivers flying in haste.
Okay. It's the red and white. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, my understanding is the original sliver. It was Bant was the one that had had success before.
Yeah.
I think that humans has proven, though, that you don't have to confine your creature decks to any amount of colors, really.
No. I mean, between Cavernous Souls, Ancient Ziggurat, and Unclaimed Territory, like, you could cast these
Sliver Hive, too.
Yeah, Sliver Hive. Like, this is... The mana base would be simple.
You have 16 gold lands and slivers without having to, like, stretch, and you have 20 if you play Ancient Ziggurat.
Yeah, so. And 24 if you want to play Reflecting Pool. I mean, you can even get another one in there if you want to.
Yeah, that's true.
I would be shocked if the 5-mana 7/7 saw play, but I do wonder if Sliver's got an upgrade with Cloud Shredder Sliver. I don't know. Why did you like this one specifically, Trey?
Well, the cascade mechanic is something that I think is very powerful, especially when you have things that are making all of the other stuff that's happening better, right? Like, every sliver that you hit is just a strict upgrade for everything that is that's going on. And so the idea of, like, slivering down the chain, right? Like, you cast this for 5, you're probably going to hit 2 more likely slivers on the way down when you do this, and that the amount of advantage that you're going to be getting at the top of your curve in that deck seems like it would be a big game.
So just to kind of, if I remember correctly, the deck played a lot of 3-mana slivers, the one that make so we have Opaline Sliver and Harmonic Sliver as its 3-mana slivers. So you want to go into your 2s. It's certainly possible that you play enough 3s to make this card good. One thing that does benefit from Cascade, though, is actually Glade Rider Sliver. It being your only, or close to your only, you could probably make it close to your only 1-mana sliver. Pretty enticing on your 2-mana slivers. Basically, all 2-mana slivers become 2-mana sliver plus Glade Rider Sliver, which does actually sound pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think that it just becomes an interesting thing to look at. And, you know, obviously, you're not going to be playing a bunch of this card, even if you were playing it. But I think that it is intriguing.
Yeah. To be fair, the idea that you get to play, first sliver into Cloud Shredder Sliver is kind of cool, right? Like, if you play that kid a Cloud Shredder, you know, you just, like, hit them for it, they might die.
Right. Yeah, that's the whole deal, right? So it's something that's intriguing. I'm hopeful that that's something that can happen, because I think that it is pretty cool, and its slivers have always been really cool, and I want to see if these pieces that are here in the new set are enough to push it into a more prominent deck.
Lightning Skelemental is next. Why don't you talk
that's
about
right. that? That's right. Lightning Skelemental is the coolest. Lightning Skelemental is black, red, red. It's an elemental skeleton. This is basically Ball Lightning and Blightning as one card. It's Trample Haste. And then whenever Lightning Skelemental deals combat damage to a player, that player discards 2 cards. And at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Lightning Skelemental, and it is a 6/1.
Do you remember the Putrid Leech 1/1 red drop Jund deck that saw play for like 2 weeks as like the new Jund deck?
Yeah.
Like, this card would go really well in that deck.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, like, from a Jund standpoint, like, a more aggressive type Jund deck, like, you, like, Bloodbraid into this is, like, insanity. That's a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, I don't know whether or not this card's going to be seeing play, but, like, that's a lot of damage, and it's a lot of advantage. I mean, if your opponent has to discard 2 cards and take a bunch of damage, and possibly, like, you know, even if they get in front of it, right, like, chump block or something, take some damage and have to discard cards. Like, this card just does a lot if there is an aggressively slanted deck that wants to do it.
I think this card might be like actually just playable in Modern right now if it also made them discard when it dealt damage to their Planeswalkers. Like, it would be able to just kill any Planeswalker and make them discard 2 cards, which would be probably just good enough for Modern.
Yeah, that would be hot.
It'd be helpful for sure.
Yeah, but I think that it's still interesting, and I don't know whether even, you know, I don't know if there's a you know, type of burn variant that would be interested in doing this. Like if you were like bumping the night and this, as opposed to, you know, some of your other splashes, like maybe that's something that you would look at. But, you know, I think that the card's really intriguing and it's super cool card. And I love the like design of the card. And it's something that I hope can find a place in modern.
Trey, we've already talked about both of your hits in Negation and Prismatic Vista. Is there anything else you wanted to say on those?
Yeah, they're awesome. They're totally great. And that I think the Prismatic Vista is going to see a lot more play than what it looks like initially. And that while, yes, you have to lean towards playing more basics, but there are things that are there. One thing with Prismatic Vista that we haven't talked about as well is that it also has the ability to fetch wastes, which could be something that Eldrazi decks are interested in.
I think if Back to Basics was in Modern, that Prismatic Vista might just be, like, insane.
Yeah, it'd be helpful, for sure.
Yeah.
It'd be, like, another baseline fetch, like, creating all the colors, right? So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mason, let's snake back to your hits.
Yes.
Yeah, so, Force of Vigor.
Yeah, so Force of Vigor is 2 green for a instant, and it destroys 2 artifacts or enchantments, or up to 2 artifacts or enchantments, and you can discard a green card on your opponent's turn to play it for free and do the same thing. So it's like double shatter for free and a green on your opponent's turn, and on your turn you need to main phase to kill stuff. It just double disenchant or whatever, I guess shatter. I don't actually know. I can't think of the card. Nature's Claim. Thank you. Nature's Claim without the drawback of life loss. So I think it's just very powerful.
Were you trying to say naturalize?
Naturalize. Thank you. I can't think of the card.
I just love that you said free and a green as a casting cost.
Yeah, you discard a green card.
What a delight that is.
Pay free and a green. I think this card is just like fine. One of the things that I think of when I see this card, like, do you think that you would ever play this in something like Titan or something like Valakut over just like Shatterstorm or?
Do you mean Valakut, like Valakut Titan or Amulet Titan or both decks? What are you talking about?
Both decks.
I do not think you would play this in Amulet Titan.
Me either.
Yeah, because you don't have enough green cards. You just have a lot of colors.
And like, I don't know that this is. Well, maybe it's better. I don't know if you would play this in Valakut.
It's different, right? Like, Valakut does have it has some like green ramp card. Like, getting stuff for free is good. I just think that like there are decks that would want to play like naturalized type effects, and this allows you to have 2 of them for free, and it's like costed pretty effectively for that. Like, it's maybe 1 too many, which I think is okay because it does have the free half of it as well. And I think that like hitting your opponents like Mox Opal or like Arcbound Ravager and Walking Ballista is like a powerful thing to do. So this seems like a card. I don't know like all the decks that want to adopt it immediately, but it's just a strong card that I know we'll see play. So
yeah, and I know we've mentioned Legacy a few times. This definitely is a card that would want Legacy Elves would definitely want this card.
Yep.
Oh, sure. That makes a lot of sense. I hadn't even thought about it in that context. That actually, yeah, that's a good reason for doing this. My last card is Urza, Lord High Artificer. For 2 BB, you get a legendary creature, human artificer. And it says, whenever Urza High Artificer enters the battlefield, create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token. This creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So kind of like the Karn minus there. And then it has, Urza has tap an untapped artifact you control, add a blue to your mana pool. And then you can spend 5 colorless to shuffle your library, then exile the top card. Until the turn, you may play that card without paying its mana cost, and is a 1/4. So, this card goes infinite with Thopter Sword combo. You make a sword, you sack the thing, you make another Thopter, cap the sword, sack it, you make a billion of them, play your whole deck, you kill your opponent. There's a bunch of different ways to get it from there. You can Walking Ballista them with an infinite mana, you can Lab Maniac, you can do whatever you want. That seems very powerful to me, and it's like just a really cool, powerful card for artifact decks. Could be a backup plan or something, or be part of an engine for like maybe a new KCI type deck, since it does like it's like half a KCI if you can tap the thing and then get rid of it somehow. So this card just seems really strong to me. What do you think about it, Spencer?
I have no idea. This is so far out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I don't know. It has a lot of words on it. The thing is when I look at cards like this, it's like this is a lot of work for somebody like me to figure out. That like wants to like play to the board, grind out my opponent, and like this is like you want to grind out your opponent, but also you don't want to do it like in a very conventional way. So, like, it just doesn't fit into my headspace very well. Mm-hmm. But that being said, like, it has a lot of words, and the last ability kind of is interesting to me. You exile the top card of the library until end of turn, you can pay it without playing its mana cost. That's, like, I wonder why that text was added on.
I think it's because it's an exact copy of, what's the old card trade that was an Urza card? It was the one in the, like, the red artifact storm deck or whatever, where, like, they would exile their top card and play it over and over again.
Do you remember? Yes, but I don't remember what it's called.
Temporal Mastery, maybe, or something like that. But there's an old card that's, like, Urza on it.
That would take
a turn. Gotcha, my bad. I don't know what it is then. But there's some card that is, like, Urza, and it's that exact text.
So you're, like, pretty confident this card is going to see play, Mason?
Yeah. If it doesn't, now, I imagine in time it would, but it enables, like, a bunch of different archetypes, including, like, the Thopter Sword, I think, actually being maybe strong enough now. Because before, I think you would, like, try and grind people out with Thopter Swording, but now you have, like, access to I Win when you have that combo. So for two, it's a two-card combo that's, like, pretty good, right? Probably like just below power level on Modern. And when you add the third card, you win the game on the spot. So that's kind of where I'm at. Trey, what do you think about it before?
I love this card. I think it's very powerful. I think there's a lot going on with it, and I am excited to try to brew decks with it. I think it's something that it cheats mana and does so with artifacts, and that is the type of thing that could result in getting banned at some point. We've seen it time and time again.
Yep. Spencer, what are your last two, your hits?
Yeah, so I was looking something up.
Okay.
But my final hit, you know, of the real hits is the Horizon Lands. So I think this card is a hit. I also think that people are saying they're going to break Modern. I'd be pretty shocked if these lands broke Modern.
They're a real cost. But,
what?
They have a real cost. Losing a life in Modern is, like, not free if you do it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I would be a little surprised. We are getting enemy ones in this set, which actually makes me think that we might be getting allied colored ones in Standard soon. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I just think that, you know, a one of Neutering Petaland, or, you know, like, these you'll just see one of play all over the place, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Like, we talked about a loan deck before. Like, having one of these, like, in a black-green X loan deck seems really good. You buy it back. It buys back your loan. It's, like, another one of the cycle lands. You're trying to do that for later. And, like, Burn, you get a bunch of red ones, so you can, like, cycle through your deck. Infect gets, like, one or two for the blue-green, which I think is really important. Like, maybe you trim a fetch because now you have scale up instead of becomements, right? And so now you need a little less fetches, and that deck sometimes just needs to get one card deeper. And having access to that, I think, is powerful, so.
And these also have potential with dredge decks. You can sack, draw cards, and dredge, and then dredge your loams and get your lands back. And go crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. So my final hit is one that I'm sure Mason is going to be unhappy with. But my final hit is just full art snow covered basics. This is just a hit. Are you not upset, Mason?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you would think that was against the spirit of rule.
No, it's weird that that's a hit, but Vista isn't for you. That was the one thing that I thought was weird.
Go ahead.
Well, do you think it's a hit because of, like, it provides a service of being full art lands for the snow decks, or do you think it's because the snows are being added to Modern? Or, like, really added, I should say.
Yeah, so snows were already added to Modern. I think the real hit is, like, having you know, snow-covered mountain go from $5 for a basic land to under $2. Like,
sure. That's real.
Like, having to pay $5 for a land just because it was, you know, only printed twice for a basic land is pretty annoying, and I'm really glad that these are entering circulation. Just in general. Also, they're just hot. Like, these are really, really pretty lands.
They're dope.
Yeah, they're great.
And maybe they're going to do something, too. We talked a lot about, like, snow might matter, so.
Yeah. Well, that is
I want snow to matter.
Me too, baby. Me too. That is going to do it for this week. You can find me at Sunset38. You can find Mason at Mason E. Clark. You can find Trey at TreyMC. You can find the podcast at CCMTG. You can like us on Facebook. Just search for CCMTG or Constructive Criticism on Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, if you want to support the show directly, you go to patreon.com/ccmtg, or you can go to swagstoreconstructing.com, buy a t-shirt, you know, rep the show out. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening, and we'll see everybody next week.
Are we doing the mailbag next week? I can edit this out if we're not.
Yeah, we should say that on the podcast.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
Next week is a mailbag episode. If you're a patron, message us. And then if you're not, still message us. And if we have extra time, we might get to yours. You can do that at the Twitters we just talked about. And as well at the email.
Yeah, so what I'll do is I'll post a thing on the Patreon for patrons. And then I will post a one in the Facebook group. So if you're a patron of $10 or more and you're a constructed critic, you'll get access to that post. And then we'll just prioritize them down. Just making sure that we get to the $10 patrons first, all the other patrons next. And then if we have room for extra questions, we will make sure to send a tweet out and you can just go on the Twitter thread. So
see y'all next week.
Bye, everybody.